This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
On this week's show, Stranger Things Season 4 drops a new trailer. We have Star Wars Celebration panel news, and we're going to take you out to the ball game. So just so everybody knows, I was gonna say something else after we're gonna take you out to the ball game, but I wasn't sure what else to say. So we're gonna talk about our favorite baseball movies. Yeah, and buy us some peanuts and Cracker Jack. Yeah, I actually thought about doing the whole "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" song instead of any other intro thing, but I decided I wasn't that confident in my singing voice.
Do you sing at the ballpark when they play it?
I do, absolutely, every time. But there's a crowd of people around me singing too, so you know, you can't hear my voice really.
Yeah.
But so this is episode 123.
You know what that means?
Three strikes, you're out.
Only 333 episodes more until episode 456.
Oh. That's not what I was thinking. I was trying to stick with baseball references. One, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, Adam, I am excited about show. We got a lot of cool stuff to talk about.
I've been chomping at the bit since I came up with this idea.
This is a good idea. One of your first. So, good job.
Thank you. That. Yeah. I mean, it was 2.5 years. So.
It took some time, but you finally came up with a good idea.
My next one in 2024.
I am, of course, joking. You have lots of good ideas. But what have you been up to this week? You have a recommendation?
Well, but I've been watching a lot of baseball movies. So
yeah. So we're going to talk about them later?
Yeah, so I'm gonna reserve mine. Put it in the reserve section. Fair. And come back to it later. So
I should probably give two then, right?
I mean, you usually do anyway.
Yeah, I do anyways. my first one, I might have talked about it already, but I finished season one of Severance, which is going to have a second season, by the way. That was confirmed. And this is a phenomenal show. I was floored by this show. I was on the edge of my seat at the end of every episode, not wanting each episode to end. I couldn't wait for the next week to be able to see the next one. You know, it was just one of those kind of shows that really pulled me in. And it reminded me almost of a, I don't want to say Twilight Zone type of feel, but it had kind of a Black Mirror almost type of feel to it. But it's a, you know, it's like a serialized show, so you know the characters stay the same and everything. But it just had that vibe to it, like
that's
like
interesting,
kind of creepy vibe to it.
I like it.
So I highly recommend it, and you know, Apple TV Plus has some good stuff on it. I would recommend the $5 subscription or whatever it is now.
You know, also you can get watch baseball Severance, on Friday nights. Coda.
You can get Friday Night Baseball now. Yeah. I just saw the other day For All Mankind season, whatever their season they're on, like 3 or 4, is coming out too, and that's a great show.
Is that Jason Momoa show?
C,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's some good stuff. And I also purchased the Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga game. And I've been playing that, and that has been a lot of fun.
Nice.
You know, I can't give it a full recommendation yet, but I am enjoying it so far.
Cool. I've only heard good things about it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. But let's dive into our one question to rule them all, which is baseball related.
One question to rule them all.
So just so everybody knows up front here, this is a very biased poll. This happens to be my top four baseball movies of all time, and I put them in here, and Adam didn't object. however, there's no metrics or anything involved in figuring this out. It's just, you know.
Any saber metrics?
No saber metrics.
No?
But,
oh, all right.
Moneyball is on this list.
It is. I was actually surprised by that.
Yeah, I love Moneyball.
I thought I might sneak Moneyball in on you, but.
No, it's one of my favorites.
I didn't know that was that high up on your list. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here are the four choices. You know, we're limited to four on Twitter polls, so
yeah,
what I had Twitter. To do. So we got Field of Dreams.
Maybe Elon will expand that someday.
Maybe we can. Maybe there's some hope for Twitter yet.
maybe.
So Field of Dreams, A League of Their Own, Moneyball, and The Sandlot. Happen to me to be my top four. So, Adam, what would you, or are you going to wait, or do you want to vote right now?
No, I'll
you
vote know, right now. Your, I mean, for me, Field of Dreams would be favorite. My favorite of those four. And it's pretty easy for me.
Same. Yeah, I'd have to go with Field of Dreams on this. I'm with you on that. There's something the few, special.
Oh, it's so special. There's one of that's one of the you few know, movies about that, movie. That will just make me cry every time.
Mm-hmm.
That ending is just.
Absolutely.
That might be the most emotional movie ever for me. That ending is just beautifully mm-hmm. done and mm-hmm. just what a story. So
yeah, fantastic. But we'll leave it to you to decide out there as well on Twitter. So be looking out for that poll. And I know somebody's going to comment and say this poll's rigged. I forget who always
Spencer.
Says that, but I know
says
that. Spencer. this is another rigged one, just so you know. Yeah. But we would love to hear your vote anyway. So, but let's move on to the news.
Sold out every copy. Tomorrow morning, Spider-Man, page one, with a decent picture this time. Move Conway to page seven.
There's a problem with page
seven. I make it page eight and give him 10% off. Okay. I make it 5%.
That can't be done.
Get out of here!
So we're going to talk about this past weekend's box office and the winner.
This is cool. I can't wait to talk about this, actually.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Yeah, big winner.
Yeah, it had a 71... million 3-day opening that surpassed the original's opening. Let's see, it also raked in another 37 million internationally. Nice. So its worldwide total was 141 million over the weekend, which is fantastic. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to take Sydney to see this over Easter break this weekend.
Yeah, I think we will too.
Yeah, we
Not
watched
Sydney.
The
we'll take Grace.
Right. You can take Sydney
okay.
with you All if right. you want. I could use like a 2-hour break, but
fair enough.
No, I love her to death. But anyway, we watched the first one last week, kind of our Tuesday movie night thing that we did. And she really liked it. So yeah, we got to go see this one too. And,
I also meanwhile, read it was the highest opening, for Jim Carrey in his career.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, if this is his last one, he's going out on
yeah.
top, you know, if he's retiring
yeah, right.
after
right.
it's a way to go out. Michael Bay's.
I think that's awesome though. I mean,
that is
for
awesome.
Me, I don't know if it's a combination of that being, you know, there hasn't been a ton of like big openings like this for kids, like for families movies. Mm-hmm. I know Disney's had a couple, but they really, pushed Encanto out quick and then put it to Disney Plus in like a month. But I mean, so as far as like theatrical releases for families and kids since the pandemic, like I feel like this is good news. You know, I think.
Yeah.
I think
this is a win.
Back to normal is what I'm feeling here. So
yeah, it feels back to normal. It feels like a big win. And, you know, this is truly like a family movie because, well, at least the first one was. Because there was, like, no bad language in the first one. Like, it was really, I really felt comfortable with everything and watching it with Sid, you know, and she's five. So, like, I felt pretty good about it. So it's good to see that. And I am so happy to announce that Michael Bay's Ambulance earned just $8.7 million domestically. So good job, Michael Bay. Ouch. Keep making big, unnecessary movies, and we'll see what happens. but one more thing to report on here. Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore, took in $58 million. From 22 offshore markets, it says here on comingsoon.net. So that was a good start. And Crimes of Grindelwald topped out at $655 million worldwide. So we'll see how much The Secrets of Dumbledore makes. I'm excited about it. I think I'm hearing good things about it. I think it brings back a lot of the kind of Hogwarts nostalgia and maybe gets back to some of that magic, and we get a lot more of Dumbledore's family and his story in this movie, I'm hearing. So I'm excited to see that. You know, Brittany and I started rewatching the Fantastic Beasts series too.
I saw IGN ripped it apart.
I'll probably like it then, because yeah. I don't usually agree with what IGN says.
They're pretty rough.
By the way, one more box office bit of information here. A couple days ago, The Batman crossed $735 million worldwide. So it's getting really close to that $800 million mark. You know, even though it's going to be on HBO Max, I think
next week,
Monday, the 18th, I believe. Yep. So yeah, it was pretty good haul for The Batman. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, indeed.
But let's move on to Stranger Things Season 4, Volume 1. The trailer has been released. I actually, before recording this, just recorded a trailer reaction, which will be up on YouTube, so look out for that. This trailer, I was kind of blown away by it for a couple of reasons. It feels really epic. It's a beautiful trailer. It includes one of, if not my favorite song of all time, which is Journey's Separate Ways. And it's kind of a slightly different take on that song. It's just awesome. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting things in this trailer. Obviously, these characters are really aging and growing up. And it's kind of teasing the beginning of the end. There's like this whole ticking clock theme throughout the trailer. It even says, you know, every ending has a beginning. And, you know, season 4 and season 5 are going to be it for this show. So hopefully we won't have to wait another 3 years for season 5. But hopefully this one will be worth the wait. Moving on to another show that I am a really big fan of. Better Call Saul's final season is going to start Monday, April 18th. And I've been rewatching season 5, which is brilliant. It's so good. It's on Netflix now, by the way, if you're interested. And there's news here. There was a Better Call Saul tweet that said they're coming back.
Saw
this. And by they mean Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston are going to guest star in Better Call Saul. So it'll be interesting to see how they possibly show up.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll just be like kind of a brief cameo that we kind of see them.
Right.
But it's getting pretty close to connecting Better Call Saul with Breaking Bad at this point, which is cool. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I'll probably catch up on Better Call Saul when it's all said and done. Kind of that's what I did with Breaking Bad. I just watched it the whole way through. So
yeah, I think it's a good show to do that with. Next, we're going to move on to some Star Wars Celebration news. So there was a live action panel that was announced for Thursday, May 26th. Lucasfilm's live action filmmakers will be joined by special guests to discuss Star Wars adventures coming soon, including Obi-Wan Kenobi, Andor, and The Mandalorian. So what else do you think we could see here, Adam, for this panel? Any thoughts? Can we get also some movie news, maybe Taika's film?
Man, I would hope so, especially if they still plan on releasing those in the windows that they have published right now. I think it's at least time to get titles or something, you know, title card, even if that's all we get. So, yeah, I think we could see that. I think we're definitely going to see Mando Season 3 stuff. Hopefully a release date for that as well. Firm release date for that. As far as live action goes, I mean, there's some rumors floating around about some other shows that have maybe started some production or, you know, that type of thing. So maybe we'll see something along those lines. I know this isn't live action, but there's also rumors or confirmations of animation, new series that might be kicking into gear. So,
yeah, I've been hearing there's some kind of secret Star Wars project in the works. So that could be something that maybe gets announced. I really hope we get the title card or for Taika's Star Wars film. It'd be awesome if like Kevin Feige showed up and was like, oh, by the way, I'm producing this. You know, I think that would be really cool. Yeah. I don't know if we're going to get that, but that would be awesome. You know, maybe we'll get some artwork for like Ahsoka or The Acolyte or, you know, some of those shows that are coming down the line, you know.
That would be nice.
So, and obviously some more stuff about Obi-Wan and Andor, you know, maybe they'll give us brief looks at those or something. Maybe a trailer for Andor.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe a little bit more than a brief look for Andor because we're getting kind of close to that, so.
And also announced for Celebration is a Mando-only panel called Mando Plus, conversation with Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni.
Sorry.
Mando Plus. So what do you think that means? That's a dumb name. I know you think it's dumb, but do you have any... I mean, I'm thinking maybe why it's called Mando Plus is because maybe they're going to talk about the whole Filoni-Favreau universe connected series like Ahsoka and... you know, if they're ever going to do that Ranger show and all those things that might be connected to Mando.
Yeah, I could see that. I think you're probably right, but it's still it's a dumb name.
Yeah, everything has to be plus nowadays, apparently.
It's synergy.
That panel is going to be Saturday, May 28th. So, yeah, I'm excited to check out Star Wars Celebration. And that is coming up soon. Let's talk a little bit about Ezra Miller, who is in The Secrets of Dumbledore. He's been in the Fantastic Beasts films. Obviously, he's DC's The Flash, which got bumped from November of this year to June 23rd of 2023. And so Ezra Miller was arrested for disorderly conduct and harassment. And so Warner Brothers... and DC execs held an emergency meeting on March 30th where they discussed Miller's future and currently hit pause on any future projects involving Ezra Miller. Any thoughts on this, Adam?
I don't even know what to say. I mean, the guy is just literally nothing but problems. And I don't know how Warner Brothers has kept him for so long, and we have at the same time we have a trial going on right now with Amber Heard and Johnny Depp.
One of which
they have also held on to, and the other one that they've fired. I don't get it. It sounds like Ezra's probably on the last straw, but
oh yeah, he's got to be.
The fact that there's just such a disconnect, you know, between what happens with all these people. And we were talking in the same week where now Will Smith can't attend the Oscars for 10 years. The whole thing is just mind-boggling. I don't know what to say beyond that. It's just...
Yeah, there's no real consistency.
I think that's what bothers me the most, but I mean... So, they're still doing the Flash movie, right? Because they're pausing everything beyond this, but then they still have the Flash coming out with him. I mean, that's...
I think that's a guarantee. Like, I think they absolutely
would have to release
the Flash after all this, you know, all that we've gotten about it and everything, and Michael Keaton being in it, and, you know, they're not going to redo it or recast it or anything at this point.
I hope they do, like, what was that online? Was it Jib Jab thing where you would like do the send in like your face or something. I hope they and it's yeah. This really shoddy version. I hope they do that for the Flash and just plaster someone else's face on top of it.
Right. What are your thoughts on going forward? And I don't know the actor's name because I don't watch the series, The Flash. What are your thoughts
Grant
on?
Gustin? I think he makes a good Barry Allen.
Yeah.
I would be okay with it. The CW shows I think are just kind of terrible. You know, I think after like a season, I think they're good for a year and then they just become terrible. But I think him overall, I think he's a good choice for Barry Allen. Do I think that they'll do that? No, I actually don't. But I would be good with that.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
I mean, I've been clamoring for Michael Rosenbaum to play Lex Luthor for how long, and I guess that'll never happen. So.
Right. Yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens with Ezra Miller here. The last thing I wanted to talk about in the news this week, Adam, was not this past weekend, but the weekend before was WrestleMania 38.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it.
Surprisingly good show.
It was good. I really did enjoy it. I enjoyed all the stuff with Undertaker that we got.
Oh, yeah. His Hall of Fame speech was just something to behold.
Mm-hmm. That was great. And this article from ComingSoon.net says, Stone Cold Steve Austin proved to be still stunning.
That match was something else.
I was really surprised by the way that match. First of all, I didn't even think we were going to get a match. I thought Austin would come out and give him a few stunners and drink some beers. You know?
The way they build that was this like stun off thing, and it was supposed to be a Kevin Owens KO show, which is his little talk show segment that he does. And I fell for it.
I fell for it.
I was like, oh, all right, this might not be anything that special. It's just going to be like he's done for the last however many WrestleManias where he comes out and cracks open three dozen beers, and that's the end of the show. But then when, you know, as the show's going on, I'm thinking maybe we might get something out of this. And then Kevin Owens challenges him to a whole no holds barred. And I'm like, what is happening? Yeah. He legit might die doing this. I mean, Stone Cold, his back, his neck, his knees might just disintegrate.
And he got suplexed on
onto the cement. They went out into the stands. And he did an actual suplex onto the cement, and
I was not expecting that.
I couldn't believe he took that bump, and he did, and it looked great. Mm-hmm. And the whole match was great. Yeah. And you know what though? All the credit in the world to Steve Austin, but even more credit for me in my mind to Kevin Owens for that match. I think he was probably the only guy on that roster that could have given Steve Austin that kind of retirement going away match. Yeah. He is just an absolute professional, and he really carried that and made it look great. You know, Steve is now 20 some years older than he was the last time he did this. Body's in the best of shape, and you know, he couldn't just do that on his own. Kevin Owens was stellar in that match, and I was really just happy for him that he got that amazing of a match at WrestleMania and that it came off the way it did, you know.
Agreed. And you know what, I didn't realize that Stone Cold had such a short career. You know, he was only in the business from like 96 until 2003.
Well, I mean,
I didn't realize that, you know,
big time. Yeah, but I mean, he was also doing stuff in WCW before that. He'd been wrestling really since the 80s. But big time, like WWE with Attitude Era and all that, it was pretty short. I mean, those guys they beat their bodies to heck, and it's not often that you get guys that are out there for, you know, like the Undertaker, that's who wrestles for 30 years anymore. Nobody does that, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and you know, it was kind of really an end of an era too.
A lot of goodbyes over that weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we had Triple H who, you know, left his boots in the ring and he retired from ring action.
Yeah, he had some health issues too recently. I know we don't talk about wrestling that much on here, but he had a heart issue where he was It was supposedly what's that word for like passed down like a family condition, like a
congenital
heart issue that could have killed him. You know,
he said, that's scary.
You know, one wrong move and he could have just been gone. And so yeah, he had to retire from in the ring, and then of course the Undertaker goes into the Hall of Fame. And then Steve Austin's retirement match. And there was a lot of, it was really, like you said, it was the end of an era and a lot of stuff that weekend.
But I'll tell you what, even though that was the case, there are definitely some wrestlers in the current era that I'm excited about and that I enjoy watching and that I think are entertaining in their own right.
They are, absolutely.
I think one of the best matches for me over the weekend was actually like the Bianca Belair and...
Oh yeah, those two put on a great match. Absolutely wonderful match. Becky
Lynch. Why can't I think of Becky Lynch? Yeah, and Becky Lynch, I thought that was a great match.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a lot of current wrestlers that I'm excited about. But overall, I thought WrestleMania was great. I was highly entertained by it.
Agreed.
So,
once again,
it is time.
Last piece of news is sad.
Yeah, to talk about another sad
piece. Seems like we do this like almost weekly now, but Gilbert Gottfried, today we found out that he passed away at the young age of 67. Gilbert was a, you know, really well-renowned stand-up comedian, but also most well-known for his roles in the Aladdin film as the voice of Iago, Jafar's parrot. Also well-known as the voice of the Aflac duck in the Aflac commercials, but he's done so many other things, and his celebrity roasts on Comedy Central is one of the things that he's, you know, really kind of known for as well. But he's this really funny guy, and another one that is just gone too soon. But apparently he was struggling with an illness for a long time that I didn't know about. I don't know if that was ever public at all. But it was some form of muscular dystrophy, I believe. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's been a rough year so far for that. So.
Yep, indeed.
But Adam, are you ready to take me out to the ball game?
Let's go. The one constant through all the years, Josh, has been baseball.
Has been baseball.
America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past. It reminds us of all that was once good and could be again. People will come, beautiful Josh. Quote. They will most definitely come.
Beautiful.
And of this course week is...
Field of Dreams.
Yeah, Field of Dreams. That is Terrence Mann, played by James Earl Jones. He gives a beautiful speech about the field that Ray is building. But that particular part of the speech, that's the one that always gets me all... you know, goose pimply and all that type of stuff, because it just hits home. And, you know, this time of year, springtime is always that time of eternal hope. Things are beginning new again, and that always means baseball as well. Even though, you know, you and I live in the greater Pittsburgh era and our hopes are usually crushed by May, it doesn't change the fact that spring is baseball time. And with baseball time, that usually means that I'm not just watching baseball, I'm watching the movies that go with it as well. So this week, we're going to talk about our favorite, not necessarily the best, but our favorite baseball movies. And we're going to divide this up. We're going to actually do it like a ball game. We're going to do 9 rounds of this. Maybe we'll squeeze in some extra innings. We'll see what it looks like at the end. But we're going to kind of take turns, and we each have 9 of our favorite movies. There might be some overlap here. In fact, I imagine there will be. And I don't particularly care what order you go in, Josh. I'm going to try to go and save my favorites for the bottom innings. But but yeah, that's what we're going to do in this week.
Yeah, that was my strategy as well.
Sweet.
So we're on the same page.
Great.
But... before I get into my first inning pick, I do want to say just how special baseball is to me. And I was really excited that you decided to do this show and come up with this idea because, you know, I've been a diehard Pirates fan since I was like 4 or 5 years old. I mean, my grandma basically raised me to be a Pittsburgh fan through and through. And, you know, I remember going to my first Pirates game when I was probably about 5 years old. And
yeah, same here, I think.
Yeah, and
pretty sure they played the Reds. And I don't think we stayed the whole time, but I'm pretty sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that would have been right around 1991. Mm-hmm. When, you know, the Pirates were good at that point in time.
Were,
and I don't have like vivid memories of their playoff run at the time and everything, but like, I do remember, like, I still get nostalgic about the early 90s, and Pirates baseball and everything. Like you said about springtime, I always get excited for the beginning of baseball season. Even when I know like the Pirates, I don't know how their season's going to go. I'm always in it for the beginning, at least, and like excited to. I've been watching the Pirates over the weekend and watched the game today and everything, their home opener. You know, there's a special feeling around the beginning of baseball season, unlike any other sport for me. So, I'm excited to talk about this. And my first inning is going to go to Angels in the outfield.
Nice.
Which also has a story tied to it. I mean, we talked, it was at the, I think it was 94 when they had the All-Star game in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And my grandma and her friend actually got us season tickets that year. And so we had the opportunity to like do some of the All-Star stuff. And part of that was them debuting Angels in the Outfield on the field at Three Rivers Stadium.
Very cool.
And on these big screens on the field.
Yeah.
And that, I just have very vivid memories of that and really loving that movie, and you know, Christopher Lloyd's in it, and and Danny Glover, and is it Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yes, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yep.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I really enjoyed that movie, so that's my first inning pick.
Yeah, and that the fact that they debuted that in Pittsburgh was interesting. I wrote about this on Years Gone By because that was actually kind of a remake. So Disney has been doing remakes for a number of years, and that was one of them. The original Angels in the Outfield was actually about the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh,
and so that
there you go. They could probably use some Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, they could use a lot more than that. But my first inning pick, I'm actually going to go with one that I hadn't seen until this year. But I'm going to go with the pride of the Yankees. This is a 1942 film. So this goes back there. This is stars Gary Cooper as Lou Gehrig. This is kind of Lou Gehrig's story, you know, from young and breaking windows, playing baseball, up to the famed, you know, consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth speech. So it kind of covers the entire thing there. But the one of the reasons why I picked this isn't just because of that. It's because you actually see some pretty interesting, I mean, they're not really cameos. They're actually like, you know, Babe Ruth is in this movie playing himself.
That's like cool.
Bill Dickey, Bill Stern, Mark Koenig, you know, these guys are in this movie playing themselves, you know, these legends of baseball, and you don't get to see them very much. You know, you can see Babe Ruth trotting around the field. You can see the, some of that stuff, but you get, you know, you get to see him acting and talking, you know, just as himself. And it's pretty cool. So
that is cool. I've never seen that one.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's worth a watch, I think. I found it for free, I want to say, like on Pluto TV or something like that. Didn't, you know, no subscription required, so it was pretty easy to find it. But yeah, so for not just the story of Lou Gehrig, you know, one of the greatest of all time, but also to see some of the greatest of all time. That's my first inning pick.
Awesome. Going into the top of the second, mine is Rookie of the Year. So we have.
I stayed away from those because I figured you would actually cover those. We're doing good so far.
Yeah, we're doing good. I'm trying to think. Is it Rowan Gardner? Is that the name of the kid?
Something the character's like that. Name yeah, that it was. Movie, yeah, it was a big name.
And so he gets you know, like arm surgery, and then all of a sudden he can throw like 99 mile an hour fastballs. Right. And I mean, it's not very realistic, but it's a lot of fun. and as a kid, I really enjoyed that. I mean, you got Gary Busey in there.
Yeah.
You've got the that dude from Home Alone. One of the wet bandits.
Is it
the
is
tall
it,
one? What's yeah, his name?
Is it Daniel Stern?
Daniel Stern, yeah.
It's Daniel Stern.
He's
yeah.
in it. He's like the pitching coach, I think.
Yeah.
And he's like hilarious in it.
Thomas Ian Nicholas is the main, Henry, whatever his last name is.
Okay.
Rowan Gardner is Thomas Ian Nicholas, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good one. I mean, you know.
It's fun.
Unfortunately, it's about the Cubs, but I can get past it.
yeah.
No, I actually rooted for the Cubs back when they won the World Series, you know, several years ago, whenever that was. But because I just, you know,
I don't know what it is. I have a hard time swallowing anything Cubs.
I mean, Nicole, if you're listening, I know you're a Cubs fan, so we still love you.
Yes.
We just have, you know, opposing teams. That's all.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rookie of the Year. Got to go with that one.
It's a good one. It's a very good one. I'll be honest, it's really hard to like kind of parse some of these down, going from 8 until like 3, because they're almost all interchangeable for me. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to put Major League here at 8 at my second inning game, as my second inning pick. So I'm going to kind of toss in the second one too, because I actually really like the second one. I know it gets hammered on reviews. Like, I looked it up and it's like 5% on Rotten Tomatoes, but yeah. I think it's funny. I mean, both of them, the first one definitely for sure has way more funny, memorable, quotable moments, you know, Charlie Sheen, the wild thing, and you know, all of these other just Pedro Serrano is the power hitter. You know, so much of this movie is just so quotable and memorable. You know, once again, it's about the Indians, so we'll have to let that slide. but it's so funny. It's one of those stories about, you know, a terrible team that kind of finds something to rally around, turn things around. Bob Uecker is in this movie, just has some of the funniest calls from the booth. but all kinds of, like, the cast in this is great. I already mentioned Pedro Serrano, played by Dennis Haysbert. You all probably know him from the is it Progressive commercials, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance guy. But Charlie Sheen is Ricky Vaughn, the wild thing. Tom Berenger's in this, Corbin Burnson, Rene Russo, Wesley Snipes. So many great roles in this, great characters. You really kind of get a feel of each one of these personalities on this team. And it's one of the things that kind of makes baseball special is you get to know these people, and you kind of get to know a little more about their personalities. They're not covered up by masks or helmets. Well, I mean, kind of helmets mm-hmm. now, because they got that thing on their cheek. But, you know, right. It's like you kind of get that more human element of this. And I think some of these movies that we're talking about, it becomes important because you know more about these people. And this is one of those movies where you just get so many of those different personalities. And I think that's what makes it mm-hmm. interesting and what makes it shine. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that one being very enjoyable, very funny. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But that's of course a good pick.
Yeah.
My third inning pick goes to The Rookie, with, Dennis Quaid. And this came out in, let me check here, I think it's 2002.
Yeah, it sounds right.
And
yes, 2002.
Basically, the synopsis of this one is a Texas baseball coach makes the major league after agreeing to try out if his high school team made the playoffs. So they kind of have the, you know, his players kind of know that, you know, he's pretty good and he's a good pitcher. And they want him to actually try out for the major leagues, but, you know, so they make this deal and everything. And I really enjoyed Dennis Quaid, and I think this is a pretty good baseball movie that I enjoyed for sure.
Yeah, that is a good one, definitely, for sure. I watched that one on Friday night, I think.
Nice.
My next is going to be an all-time classic, and I kind of feel like this is bottom of the third, right? Kind of feel bad that this is so early here. But it's A League of Their Own. About the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, I believe it was.
Yeah, that sounds right.
The league during World War II that popped up where, you know, women were playing professional ball. And this is about, you know, once again, you just get so many great personalities on this team. And you follow Gina Davis, who's Dottie Hinson, her relationship kind of with Madonna's character, May. Tom Hanks is Jimmy Dugan, their manager, Rosie O'Donnell's in this.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's just a great role for Tom Hanks. But, you know, you kind of get their whole story, and then it wraps up with this, they go, you know, they're at the Baseball Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame is unveiling an exhibit for the Girls Professional League. And, you know, kind of ends up there, and you see them later down the road and kind of reuniting in some form, and they're getting, you know, finally recognized for this. But, you know, once again, a comedy, but also just a really great heartfelt story as well.
Yeah, this movie has a lot of heart. And talk about absolutely. Those movies that kind of make you cry at the end. This one always gets me at the end.
Yep.
When they come back and they're elderly and, you know, they're in the Hall of Fame finally, and that always chokes me up. And I always think of my grandma. She was a diehard baseball fan, diehard pirate fan, loved this movie. Mm-hmm. And I always think of her when I watch that, and it kind of makes me a little bit sad at the end, you know, just
it is kind of a sad,
but yeah, definitely.
I mean, it's a happy ending,
pulls on my heartstrings,
but there's also definitely sad elements. I mean, some people are gone, you know, Jimmy Dugan is gone, and there's a finality to that, even though we're kind of, honoring them, you know, there's still a fanatic, you know, kind of like the Undertaker stuff we were talking about, you know, it was a great speech, but then there was also a lot of tears that are shed, you know, during that thing. So, you know, it's just, it signals the end, and, you know, it's sad. So,
yeah, for sure. But I love that one. That one's definitely on my list. I'll get to that in a little bit.
One of the best lines in any baseball movie too. There's no crying in baseball.
There's no crying in baseball. Yeah. Fantastic. Yep. I use that line in different ways. Like sometimes I'm like, there's no crying in elementary school, you know, but there's a lot of that actually. Where are we? Top of the fourth?
Top of the fourth.
I got to go with For Love of the Game, another Kevin Costner baseball movie. It might not be the best, but I really enjoyed it. And it, basically his character is coming towards the end of his career, Billy Chappell, a Detroit Tigers pitcher. And he's kind of deciding how he's going to go out, you know, how is his career going to end and everything. And, I really enjoyed this one. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I do remember, you know, liking it quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to talk about that one more in a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
So my bottom of the fourth is, I'm going to go with Moneyball here. Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill? Jonah Hill. Playing Billy Bean in a fictionalized version. They call him Peter Brandt in this, I believe. But that's an alias for who he actually was supposed to be playing, and I'm blanking on the guy's name.
Let me see if I can.
Paul DePodesta.
Might go to help you out there. Paul, oh, you got it.
Paul
okay.
DePodesta. Yeah. You know, this kind of covers the story of the early 2000s Oakland Athletics, who, you know, this story always hits home for me because we've talked a few times about how we live in Pittsburgh, and you know that's a small market team. And this story covers, you know, kind of the same idea. You know, the A's are the same small market team. Their salary back then is probably pretty close to our salary now.
Probably.
Which is scary. You know, but this team went from, you know, giving up. They go on a good run in 2001, I want to say. And then at the end of that season, you know, contracts are up. Small market teams really can't do much when that happens. And so they have to let these guys go, you know. And that's what happens here. They lose Jason Giambi. They lose Johnny. He went to the Red Sox. Johnny. Geez almighty, why can't I think of this?
I'm sorry, I can't help you with
Johnny
that
Damon.
One. Johnny Damon.
Yeah. They lose these guys, big name guys, and so they have to rebuild, and they want to do it quick. And so they start using, you know, I made a joke earlier in the show about something called sabermetrics, but that's really what they lean on here. They lean on kind of a really heavy mathematical approach to the game, and they rebuild using guys that nobody else, no other team in the majors wanted, you know. Didn't fit their profile.
But they get on base.
But they get on base. That's the big thing. And that's what they start to look at. And, you know, this movie kind of, you know, I kind of knew what sabermetrics was before I watched this movie, but this movie got me interested to learn more about what it meant. And it doesn't really go into any of the things that, you know, maybe the book does or maybe some other books do that, you know, you can get. So it doesn't really go into, like, what is wins above replacement or all this other stuff. But it gets you to the idea that that's what they were driving at. They're trying to find some type of formula, some type of way to find the guys for cheap that can get them on base and get them runs, because that's what they're doing. They're trying to buy runs. So it was a very well done movie and a very good look at what that whole thing meant. And I think it's a good introduction to, you know, if you want to learn more about what baseball is today, I think that's a good stepping stone to check out Moneyball.
I agree. It's fantastic. One of my favorites, definitely on my list too. Next up for me in the top of the fifth is 42. And that is basically this.
let's just spend this whole ending talking about 42 then.
Okay, we can do that. So it's about Jackie Robinson. Yes. And how he became the first African-American player to play Major League Baseball in the modern era. And you have Harrison Ford in this
great
film. You have
he's good fantastic as Branch Rickey. I mean, in this. So good.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Chadwick Boseman, obviously,
one of his
a
best
great
roles.
Performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I sometimes forget that he was in this when because, you know, now I just think about Black Panther and everything.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
But he was great in this one, too.
Yes. Yes.
And it deals with racism that he faced.
Absolutely.
And everything like
that. It doesn't
that.
Hold back and, either. And that's what I respect about it. It doesn't hold back. I'm sure it's a toned down version of what he actually went through, but, you know,
right. I would imagine. Yeah.
The language and, you know, all this other stuff that they use is, you know, pretty authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this is, and again, I feel like all these movies, it's been so long since I've seen them and I need to go back and watch them again. Yeah. I need to revisit this one, but, it's definitely one of my favorites.
You know, one thing I'll say about 42 is I think it has great on-field baseball action. Some of these, like we just talked about Moneyball, I think there's really hardly any on-field baseball action in Moneyball. And what there is footage from real games, you know. They do have their actors go out and, you know, kind of do a little bit of a, you know, stuff like that, but there's not a lot of like really acted on-screen baseball action in that movie.
That's a good point.
I think this is very different. You know, this has stellar. Chadwick Boseman does a great job. Everyone in this movie does a great job of actually, you know, acting out the game and, you know, recreating those games from back then. So,
fantastic.
So
we are in the top of the sixth.
Yes.
And I'm coming back around to A League of Their Own. I can't say much more than Adam, what you said and what I kind of followed up with on that. It's just a fantastic movie. And I love the fact that it focuses on this historic event of these. It came down to the women, you know, to step up and be the entertainment and to provide the baseball.
It doesn't get enough attention. You know, yeah. I mean, it is this movie. There's really not much else, you know, about that, you know, as far as pop culture goes, you know?
Yeah, so I love A League of Their Own, and it's one of the best.
Yeah, agreed. So my bottom of the fifth, I'm going from 42 up a few numbers to 61. 61 is an HBO original film about the home run chase between Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle. And this is a movie actually, I believe, directed by Billy Crystal, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some definitely like green screen usage that you can kind of definitely see now. So some of that doesn't really hold up so great. Yeah. However, everything else about this movie is awesome. I think the casting in this is superb. Barry Pepper plays Roger Maris, and man, looks just like Roger Maris. Thomas Jane plays a great Mickey Mantle. The way this movie is kind of structured is it starts off in the summer of 98 around Maris's family. Maris has passed away at this point. His wife and his kids, though, are kind of following Mark McGwire's and Sammy Sosa's home run chase in 1998, which for me, regardless of anything else that happened after that, that is one of the most memorable summers I have still in my life. God.
I mean, absolutely. I mean,
nothing, you know, and I remember,
I think I was at least a couple of the games where home runs were hit by Sosa or McGwire, you know. Awesome.
I mean, you just don't see that. And then the newspapers are counting, you know, and you see that in this movie too. The newspapers are counting, you know, where these guys are at, and you see this every day.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to hit one. You know, you go to school the next day, you're talking about that. You know, you're talking about the home runs that they hit the night before. Just one of the, like I said, I don't care what happened after that with steroids or any of that stuff. That summer is still the most memorable summer I've had in baseball.
Yeah.
To this day. And you know, this kind of covers that, you know, in the 60s. It starts off with them with Maris's family, like I said, following McGwire. They're in St. Louis. It starts off at the day that McGwire requested Maris's bat from the Hall of Fame. And so he got the bat, and he's kind of talking about the bat, and it's in front of him at a press conference. And it kind of triggers memories in Maris's wife. And so this movie kind of goes back in time at that point and then catches up with them later. So then you get the story of that whole season from start to finish. Everything that they go through, you know, Maris is, you know, with the stress around dealing with the media because he wasn't really loved as a player in New York at that time. You know, Mickey Mantle with his health problems and how he was playing basically hurt every day. It's a really great look at that whole home run chase from 1962. So
I need to check that out. That's one I have not
watched.
It's
on HBO Max. So
nice. Good to know.
Good movie.
Because I don't know if it was some type of series that covered the McGwire and Sammy Sosa race that was excellent. Yeah. And I really loved it. And I can't think of where it was or, you know, what exactly it was called, but it was awesome. So I think I'd be interested in this too.
Yeah. Check it out. It's a great movie. It's a really great movie.
Awesome. Moving on to the top of the seventh, I have The Sandlot in there. The Sandlot, I just love this movie. And Sydney and I watched it last summer, and she enjoyed it too. And it's just, it's a great summer movie. It's a great baseball movie. You know, it's just about playing pickup games in you know, wherever you're playing over the summer as a kid. And there's a lot of great one-liners in this one, a lot of great quotes in this one too. I mean, I probably say "You're killing me, Smalls," at least once a week in regular life. And, you know, there's just so many great moments, and I absolutely love The Sandlot.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so my bottom of the seventh pick is one that you already mentioned. It's For Love of the Game. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about this already. Kevin Costner is Billy Chappell. There's also John C. Reilly in there, plays his catcher. I forget his name. I'm not going to remember it. I'm not going to look it up. but I think it's a bit long. Some of the love story can be a bit sappy. But overall, I love how the story of his life is told around this perfect game. And so, pretty much probably the last game of his career. Mm-hmm. He's reflecting on everything. I think it just makes everything make sense. And, you know, Kevin Costner, for whatever reason, I actually didn't put Bull Durham on my list, but I mean, that would have been three Kevin Costner movies that are all really great baseball movies. And For Love of the Game is one that makes my top three. And, I just love this movie the whole way through. And I even like the love story, you know, like the struggles there, like how it kind of correlates with the struggles he's having on the field at that particular moment in time. It's a really good movie. Another one of those that has really great on-field action, baseball action too. So,
yeah, I really like how this one, like this movie is, how the story is structured. Yeah, kind of like you mentioned, me too. You know, so going to the top of the eighth, you know, it's Moneyball for me. Moneyball is my second favorite baseball movie. We talked about it earlier. I just love it. I think Brad Pitt is great. I think Jonah Hill is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I love how deep they get into the statistics and everything. And it just gives me like false hope for the Pirates. But I look at teams like the A's of that time and like Tampa Bay in the recent past. And I'm like, man, why can't the Pirates just do this?
It's a frustrating and thing. Make is, this happen. They can. They just don't.
Yeah. And, you know, there was that period of time, 2013, 14, 15, when it was a great time to be a Pirate fan again. And it was like, oh, we had this figured out. They didn't make the necessary moves after the 2015 season to sustain it and keep it going. But,
and to be honest, they didn't make the necessary moves in the 13 or 14 seasons either.
Right. There could be an argument made for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe they can get a young team together again with some talent, and you know, they're certainly paying Key Brian Hayes a lot of money for a long time, but
it's good. I don't to know him if break that's his a, wrist.
Yeah,
but I mean, this movie though, to kind of touch on that and bring it back to the movie, is that this movie shows what small market teams need to do, and they need to be money minded, and they need to find the guys that people are overlooking. They need to, you know, think about the game differently rather than just bringing in, you know, the $180 million season slugger that's, you know, going to hit 50 home runs. You know, that's not how these teams need to think about it. They need to think about the game differently. And that's what this movie highlights. And that's why I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
So my bottom of the eighth pick is Field of Dreams. Nice. And I, you know, we talked about this movie already. I love it so much. The ending of this movie is so good. But this is a movie, you know, kind of like how Moneyball got me interested in sabermetrics and, you know, that type of statistics. Field of Dreams kind of got me interested in, you know, more of the older days of baseball, Shoeless Joe, that era, the older Yankees and White Sox, Red Sox, you know, those stories, that type of thing. You know, beyond just being a great story with a great ending, and, you know, kind of tying in a little bit of literature there as well. I just love how it highlights that, you know, kind of golden era of baseball, I think, when it was, you know, a little more new, and heroes that we talk about still, the Ty Cobbs and the Babe Ruths of that era. And then, of course, the Shoeless Joe Jacksons, who, you know, maybe his story got kind of cut short, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so you learn about what happened to him and why that name is important, and, you know, all this other stuff. So for those reasons, beyond just being a great movie, is why it's so high up on my list.
Yeah, and for me, it's my favorite baseball movie of all time. It's my top of the ninth pick. You know what I really love about Field of Dreams is it has this supernatural quality to it.
Oh yeah,
you know
yeah.
It has this sort of belief in fate. You know, belief in the
fate,
supernatural
an afterlife. Yeah,
yeah, you know, I just love that about it. I love him hearing this voice and just listening to this voice and deciding to build a field and risk his whole livelihood, risk his family's money and everything, mm-hmm. Driving across the country, you know, because he's getting these clues from the voice and everything, that leads him to these different characters in different places. And then ultimately it ends with him having this catch with his father, which is just the resolution of this internal struggle he's had for years. I think it's beautiful.
Not just that, though. I mean, yeah, of course that culminates in that, but I think one of the most powerful mm-hmm. parts of the movie is the doc. You know, mm-hmm. he finds this doctor and, you know, he can play ball, but then the doctor chooses to step out of that and to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
Just to save his daughter. And, mm-hmm. you know, at that point you kind of learn a little bit more about the rules of the field. You know, they can't cross that line. And once they do, it's over. Mm-hmm. but the doctor is there to save his daughter, you know, and that's another, you know, I mean, we're talking about a ghost, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about the supernatural. I mean, that's what all this is. Mm-hmm. you talk about, you know, this guy who is able to relive that a little bit. And not only just relive his baseball past, but his life as a doctor that ended up being more important to him, that he got to relive there at the end as well.
Yeah, there's just so many powerful moments in this movie.
Yeah.
So, it is my fave.
All right. I'm going to cheat for my bottom of the ninth pick.
However, all right.
However, this is why I am cheating, is because this is actually called a film by Ken Burns.
Oh, okay.
However, this film is divided into like 10 different 2-hour episodes. So mm-hmm. this is like 20 hours of watching here. But this is Ken Burns Baseball. It's a PBS production that was done in the 90s and then picked back up again late 2000s, I believe, to kind of cover that extra decade. But it actually kind of mm-hmm. goes decade by decade through the years, the history of baseball. I actually found this for free on PBS's website. The first time I watched it was years ago on Netflix. But you can actually watch it on PBS's website. And I think I might have seen it somehow on Apple TV.
Okay.
But I'm sure if you find the PBS app or whatever, I'm sure you can probably watch it on there as well. But this is, like I said, 10 2-hour episodes that go pretty much decade by decade. And I think that this is a really beautifully done. Ken Burns makes some great documentaries. But this one in particular, I think is probably my favorite of his. And it just gives you so much, you know, I just got done talking about the history of like Shoeless Joe, but it covers so much more than that. And mm-hmm. if you want to learn about, you know, where this game has been and where it's gone and learn about these people that we've talked about, like Jackie Robinson or Shoeless Joe or Babe Ruth. It covers them so well and it gives them so much personality. You hear, you know, you hear their quotes. Sometimes if, you know, as we get later, you hear them. It's just so well done. And then with the music and mm-hmm. the background that they use, just gives it such a genuine quality. You know, you kind of it feels like it takes you back in time, you know, to those eras that we're talking about, like early 1900s, even even mid to late 1800s. You talk about the origins of the game, and you know, some of these stories of, you know, Cy Young and all these guys from back then, all the way up through Hank Aaron, and then covers the steroid era and all this other mm-hmm. stuff. So I mean, it's an amazing look at the history of baseball, and it's a lot of watching. But it's absolutely, absolutely worth it. So
awesome. I'm gonna have to look for that. So sounds like a pretty comprehensive look at the game.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, it's cheating because it's not really a movie. They call it a film, but it's like 20 some hours long. So it's worth every minute spent watching it.
Nice. So. Well, that's the ball game, folks. We reached the bottom of the ninth, and I think there was a walk-off homer there with that one. So, well done, Adam.
Went bad around the order with the length of that one there.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
Thank you for tuning in to episode 123 of From a Certain Point of View. Remember to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. And if you're on an app like Apple Podcasts that lets you leave a review, please do so, because that'll help us get out to more and more people, and also lets us know what you like about the show. We are continuing our Discord watch parties. We're watching Moon Knight, which I think has been stellar, by the way. So we are on episode 3 of that, which will be Thursday at 10 p.m. in our Discord server. The link for that is always in the show notes. It's also on our website, facpov.com. And there you'll also find links for other places you can get in touch with us and follow us, including all of our socials, such as Instagram and Twitter. Both of those are at CertainPOVPod. Our Facebook page is From a Certain Point of View. Our email address is CertainPOVPod@gmail.com. And if you would like to leave us a voicemail, maybe you'd like to let us know what your favorite baseball movie is, or give us a list as well. We'd love to play those on the show, and you can do that by calling 724-901-1783. Once again, 724-901-1783. Remember, we are part of the Red 5 Network. It's a wonderful group of podcasts that is growing all the time. And you can find all of the podcasts on the Red 5 Network at red5network.com, and also on Twitter at red5network. You can find me on the internet at thegauze85 on Twitter and Instagram, and also on my Disney blog, Ears Gone By. Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JediJarJar1722, and my YouTube channel is called Live God's Truth. You can check that out. And make sure to check out From a Certain Point of View's YouTube channel, where I will be dropping this week the Stranger Things trailer reaction. And thank you, everybody, for listening this week and just being a part of this community and following our podcast. We couldn't do it without you. And until next time, everything we said was true.
From a Certain Point of View.